Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
Hey, this is Hannah Forden. I'm the program manager here at Heritage Radio Network. This year, we're celebrating HRN's 10th anniversary, and I want to thank all of our listeners and members for being a part of an incredible year of food radio. We never would have made it this far without all of you. So HRN is now in its summer fun drive, and this is when we turn to you and ask that you make a donation to help ensure a bright future for food radio. Whether you listen to one show or 20, there's a reason why you keep tuning in week after week. All of our content is powered by a small nonprofit, and we rely on your generosity to keep going. Help us keep broadcasting the most thought-provoking, entertaining, and educational conversations happening in the world of food and beverage. So become a member today. To celebrate our 10th anniversary, we have some brand new member gifts available online. So I encourage you to snag your new favorite pizza-themed t-shirt or enamel pin today and show the world how much you love HRN. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate so you can snag your 10th anniversary member swag. And thank you.
Welcome to HRN Happy Hour. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, and somewhere is Bushwick. I'm Kat Johnson. Thanks for tuning in. Katie Mosman-Wadler is in the booth. She'll be here in a second. We also have Hannah Forden, our program manager.
Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. Oscar, our intern, is hanging out in the back. Keep him in the corner.
He'll be back. In peril. Like, they're going to come knock on our door and be like, what are you doing to him?
Help him. Our engineer, Amanda Wang, is in the booth as well. Hey, Amanda.
Hello.
Guys, exciting show today. We have some of our favorite guests back in the studio. We have John DeBerry and Michael Romali from the Restaurant Workers Community Foundation. Hello.
Hello.
And we have, joining them this time around, we have Lynette Marrero, also a board member of the Restaurant Workers Community Foundation and of Speed Rack. People that listen to HRN are familiar with you.
Yes.
So no introduction needed. Also, it's a really important day today because it's someone's birthday. Happy birthday to Michael!
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to
me.
Thank you.
What have you been doing to celebrate your birthday today?
John gave me these amazing platform rainbow sneakers, and I've been wearing them around the apartment and not falling on my face. So
I feel like the shoes have to be our episode photo. Like,
yes.
You guys are both like very lovely to look at, but I feel like our listeners need to know what we're talking about because they're extraordinary.
They're like rainbow bright, if anyone remembers. Yeah. Like, the most rainbow fantastic shoes ever.
I love it.
John got the birthday present right.
And I actually got them a long time ago, and it's surprisingly hard to hide like 5-inch platform sneakers.
I would think so.
Where did you put them?
Don't you want
them? We'll never know.
We also have a birthday cake for the birthday.
Yay!
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Michael. Happy birthday to you.
And happy Stonewall
and Paul. Got them all in one row. Yeah.
Can we describe this cake?
Tell me about it.
What?
Tell me about it.
Okay, so I think it's a raspberry and mango mousse with a coconut sponge.
Oh.
That's what's inside of it.
So great,
it
British Bake Off.
It looks like
of
a
you.
Giant lifesaver.
Yeah.
It is gorgeous.
Yay.
Great job picking out
thank
the cake,
you, thank
guys.
You.
It's beautiful. The picture that you sent me, Katie, really didn't do it justice because it's so much more vibrant and bright.
We obviously got the best one.
It was already in the box when I had to send you the picture. It turns out it doesn't enjoy the heat, but it's just kind of relaxing a little bit, and it just slid over to the corner. It's sort of avant-garde placement on the tray.
Love it. I smell the candles. Yes.
Yeah, it smells like birthday candles. What a happy day.
Yay! So we're drinking Negronis because it is Negroni week.
Oh, did I spoiler it? Sorry.
No.
I was in the other room lighting a big fire.
We're excited about Negroni week. If you aren't familiar with Negroni week, we're going to get into that a little bit later, what the deal with the Negroni week is. But first, we have a couple of announcements and some headlines. You heard at the top of the show Hannah giving us the 411 on the summer fun drive. But Hannah, do you want to give any updates on the drive?
Repetition, repetition, repetition. That's what I always say. And hey, guys, you heard me say it once. I'm just going to reiterate slightly. It's our summer fun drive. And I don't know if you know, it takes like so much work and so much money to make food radio. And it's super, super fun, but we still need your help to make it happen. And thank you for listening. But if you enjoy what you hear, if you listen to any of our shows, take a minute and make a gift of whatever level makes you happy. And it'll mean the world to us because you'll show us how much HRN and food radio means to you. We truly, truly, truly can't do it without all of you. So go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate. I've made some really, really special presents for you that I hope you like. So check those out, pick one out, and you'll make us really, really happy.
Yeah, and the more donations come, the more easy it is for Hannah to put the fun in Summer Fun Drive. So keep them rolling in. Also, we have to give a huge shout out to a couple of big, big supporters today because we just closed our Charity Buzz auction for summer. And one of you lovely human beings bid over $10,000 to tailgate with Gary V at a Jets game. I almost said a Mets game. That's the other game. So that's incredible. Thank you so much. All of those dollars go to supporting food radio. And then another one of our amazing fans donated over $3,000 to have lunch with Phil Rosenthal.
Also
and,
worth it.
That's going to be so worth it. It's either going to be New York or LA, your choice. Thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And especially thanks to Phil and to Gary V for donating those lots, making somebody's day just incredible beyond, and for helping support our summer drive. We love you.
We really do.
Awesome. Okay, so now we have a few headlines, and in the spirit of Pride, all of our headlines this week are Pride related. So, Katie, kick us off.
All right. So, June, it's Pride.
Yay.
Which means people all around the world are gathering to honor the LGBTQ community with parades, parties, and celebrations of all kinds. Here at HRN, it's no different. We are coming at you with some Pride-themed headlines. So, this week on Meet & Three, we dropped a very special episode exploring some of the history and the present of LGBTQ communities gathering around food. We teased the first episode, first ever, guys, of Queer the Table, new to the HRN lineup, and we enjoyed an always wholesome and warm bowl of food at Queer Soup Night and traveled to Toronto, Canada, for a dazzling drag brunch.
So we teased it in Meet & Three, but the time is finally here. Episode one of Queer the Table has hit the airwaves, and we're so excited. The show focuses on the importance of gathering in queer communities to eat together. It was important to Nico Whistler, our host, to start with a reminder that the right to do it visibly and in a public space has been hard won. Tune in to hear the stories of three pre-Stonewall era uprisings that took place in late night restaurants that served as safe spaces for queer folks, the Compton's Cafeteria Riot, the Dewey's Cafeteria Sit-In, and Cooper's Donuts Riot.
And on the latest Bushwick podcast, Luke takes us behind the scenes for our neighborhood's very own queer feminist theater company called Sacred Circle Theater. Sorry. So host Luke Griffin takes listeners with him to learn about how those at the company are reimagining theater to build a space where everyone belongs and creating an intimate, vulnerable experience unlike any other on the stage. You can find this episode as well as any of our other content at heritageradionetwork.org and anywhere you get your podcasts. So be sure to subscribe to Meet & Three, Bushwick Podcast, Queer the Table, and all of our other shows.
Yes. Thanks for those headlines, Oscar. Nailed it.
And like Hannah said, just casually subscribe to all the shows. It's fine. You don't have a job,
time.
Do you?
You have time to listen to all of them.
It's cool. It's only like 35 hours a week.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, you have time.
Yeah. Two people that I think don't have time are John and Michael. They're very, very, very busy. So, guys, you were here about 6 months ago talking about what's new with RWCF. What's happened since then?
Take it away.
you seem really prepared. You have notes.
I have notes. So a couple of things. We set out our objectives for this year of really building our people who have joined as members to become, sign up for our newsletter and learn about what's going on contemporaneously in the restaurant field. So we sent out four newsletters over the past 6 months, and we have built our board. We had a goal of getting our board up to 20 people, and we're getting very close. We've just voted some new board members onto the board. Our events committee has met twice, and we have going to have our first big fundraiser in late September. We're very excited about that. But I think most importantly, we've really been working with other organizations in the restaurant field and in mental health, substance abuse, sexual violence, other organizations working in our program areas and learning about how they could apply what they're doing to the restaurant industry if they're not already working with restaurant workers. Been talking a lot with those people. We've been writing a lot about restaurant issues and writing op-eds and really getting the message out that we are a community and that we're ramping up and we're really organizing.
I want to come back to the op-ed because you have a really great one that we want to talk about, especially it's very much in line with Pride Month. But Lynette, you're a board member of RWCF. Talk a little bit about how you got involved and why this organization is important to you.
I got involved because John stalked me and said, you must come do this thing with me. I'm like, okay, I'm a big fan of, this community that we're very fortunate to be in. The hospitality community is extremely generous and, really galvanizes to a lot of causes. And I have gotten to see that over the last 8 years with Speed Rack, that our community can make really big changes. And we are starting to really embrace, I think we have an opportunity to show the broader world what can be accomplished within a smaller community. We're tackling diversity. We have dealt with, we were tackling with Me Too issues far ahead of the rest of the country before it happened. So I think the vision was just right on, that we need to be ahead of the curve and really addressing things, like mental health and things that really, as this industry becomes more sustainable, it's only sustainable if we make it for the people who are in it and feeding that. And I think that's why restaurant workers is so important, because it's thinking ahead of that. And I think it's the time now. I think we finally have an opportunity where people are engaged and understand that restaurant workers are doing this as a career, and that's really been building and building, but we have to be treated like any other workers in America, and that those systems need to push for them to be in place. So I'm very proud to be the cheerleader, megaphone, whatever we need to make those things happen.
And are you still working with Llama Inn?
I am.
Cool. So can you talk a little bit about the fact that you're very much still a member of this community? It's like what you do day in and day out, and then how you kind of fold in your work with RWCF into like your day-to-day life.
Absolutely. So actually, we had a fundraiser at Llama Inn the other night, and John and Michael came, and we gave up the restaurant for the evening to an organization called Helem, which works to help basically legal fees for anyone who is persecuted because of their of gay rights. And so we had this great event that night, and it was really about community coming together and being in a space that, at Llama Inn, we are, it's a beautiful company run by lots of brown people. And so the community vibe that's in there, it very much is that Latino hospitality. What you do is you see that in the most wonderful of ways. We're really trying and working hard to build up our team, so we have a comfortable space for Spanish speakers and workers. And then we're also really helping them as they want to move up and progress their career within our community. And that's been really important. Actually, this year we got to promote one of our barbacks who's been with us for over 2 years to bartender, and his first cocktail is on our menu this year. And so that kind of growth and those pathways need to be open to a broader community than we've previously seen. And I've done that already with my work with women, and now we can expand that within our community. But, that is what it's about. It's identifying that next wave of people who are going to make hospitable places and talk the talk and walk the walk.
Amazing. John, can you talk more about other events that RWCF has been working on and what you hope to do for events going forward?
Well, yeah. So I think a lot of what's going on since we launched is like sort of
coming to terms with reality and having plans and being able to roll with, to execute those plans, but also know where, what you can and can't do. So we, I'd love to host like a huge gala sometime, someday. So like your yearly gala is actually quite inspirational to me. And it's like kind of the model I'd love to like replicate, but you know, we're basically like a couple of part-time volunteers at this point. So we're hoping to do a few smaller, more low stakes events, just kind of like similar to the event that we did last year, where it's just gathering people in the community and talking to people. But now that we're sort of up and running, it's a little bit more of a fundraiser and a little bit more trying to do like silent auctions, raffles, other kinds of ways of raising money from the community. Now that we have a stake in the ground and we can say, hey, this is what we're doing and we need your help to make it happen, just like, you know, you guys are doing with your summer fun drive.
Yeah.
Which you should definitely donate to.
And it's our, I mean, to that point, I think what we've really notice is how it's really, when you start a charity, it's the hardest thing. No one tells you charities are really hard to do. Yeah. But they are, and you have to really find ways of explaining what you're doing to a broader community. And I think internally we are really kind of finding our own identity, and I think through the new board members that we have, we've gotten so many great ideas, and that's what's great about this industry, you know. Like I found, like, I'm like this really casual recruiter. I'll go to an event and be like, hey, what are you doing right now? Oh, great. You just left this job. What are you doing? We need you right now. Come and do this. So we just recruited, you know, I'm like constantly out there looking for people who want to add some of philanthropic work to their plate. And I think a lot of people want to, and it's about finding that time and that way. And so for us, I think a big part was people who are really experienced in communications and how we can get our word out there. And especially with these events that we plan on doing, you know, doing those low stakes events fit a lot within who we are as a community, because if we can get the broader, more people coming to a smaller events, then we can obviously spread the word on a bigger basis. You know, New York gets hit with a lot of big galas, and for us to distinguish ourselves, you know, we're like, you know what, we're grassroots and we should have grassroots things, and we can invite as many people to come so we can spread that to a bigger platform. And then the next things that we're really going to try and work on is, you know, we have a listening campaign that we've been pitching for a while to really find out what the needs of our community are. And I think, you know, we can identify and say what we think those things are right now and start working towards as charities, but there's probably issues that we don't know yet that we can expand upon and really maybe you know, have a more singular focus in the areas that we have on tackling little things that we can make change on and then progress forward from there.
I want John to talk about our connection to Negroni Week, because we're very happy about Negroni Week. But I think the last time we were here, we might have talked about the fact that we're going to do this charity little drag show.
Yes.
Oh my God. So much fun. And you'd be surprised how much money drag queens can raise on a Tuesday night in Williamsburg. I was really super impressed with the people at... oh my God, I'm drawing a blank on Wallbreaker.
It's a monthly benefit called Wallbreaker.
The people at Wallbreaker were just amazing. They did such a wonderful job on our behalf, and they raised lots of funds for us. It was great. So that was our first little like kind of public fundraiser. And then we're doing Negroni Week, and we're doing our big fall fundraiser, and then a small fundraiser. You want to say? Is it you? I don't know what your order you want to talk about.
I don't have any order. You guys can totally steer the ship. Negroni Week.
Yeah, so we have been thinking about joining Negroni Week, sort of not really as like a major thing. Just like, oh yeah, we should get involved somehow and try to see if we can be a partner with Negroni Week. And so the way that it works now is that you kind of have to apply to be one of their charities. And so we got through that process, which was kind of a relief. It felt a little validating. And then last week, the person who ran Negroni Week sent over an Excel spreadsheet of all of the accounts that had signed up to benefit us. And, you know, if you had asked me like 2 weeks ago how many it would be, I would have said like 20, like 50 maybe. It was like 264.
Wow.
Which is out of control.
We are the chosen charity of 260 some, you know, restaurants. That's amazing.
That's incredible.
Globally, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, which is like from Argentina. What did you say, Thailand?
There was a bunch in Thailand, I believe Israel. So for us, you know, I'm involved with a Negroni Week through our Speed Rack partner as well, Share. And I was in a seminar with Karen Foley from Imbibe Magazine last year, and we talked a lot about these kind of initiatives. And this is just kind of when we were starting, and, you know, I yapped my mouth. I'm like, hey, we're doing this thing. And then we sent them all invites on the fall when we were launching. And it was great because when you look at the list of the charities that Negroni Week has, they range in so many different places. And there wasn't anything really what we were in our focus. And I think that was really advantageous for us because people clicked on it and resonated with what we're trying to do. And I think why globally people saw it is because I think everyone's kind of, you know, it's that thing that happens. Like, we don't realize everyone everywhere is always trying to think of the similar ideas, and that happens in our industry. And so I think we resonated with what we're trying to do with a broader global cocktail community, which is pretty awesome because that means we now have contacts in many different places. And I think the initiative will grow. And if we inspire people in their community to start other restaurant worker community foundations, that's kind of always the goal, is to see, you know, communities themselves rising up to do that as well.
Yeah.
And we talked about this a little bit with like the Giving Kitchen, and you guys have been in touch with them. And I think the similar thing is happening where restaurants, when they have the opportunity to give back to an organization that's actually going to benefit the people that work in their industry, it's very exciting. And that's why, and on one hand, it's not at all surprising that many people would want to support the organization.
Yeah.
But then our local shout out too. So it says Existing Conditions is doing Negroni Week for us. All of the Rains Law Room or Dear Irving
all of them.
Locations.
Freeman's,
the Gibson, Grand Army.
Mm-hmm.
There's like, yeah.
So a lot locally here in New York.
Apologies to the ones we didn't name.
Which is pretty great. You have a few days left to go drink up Negronis and support us. And it is a really cool initiative. I think it's been going on for 5 years now. Is that?
I remember how many years.
It's been quite a few years.
2013.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
So
six,
in the newsletter.
We're in the sixth year.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's pretty cool. And it's been great to see how Imbibe and Campari have grown the initiative over the years. Especially, I think, when they went global, that was a pretty awesome thing, because I really do, like I said, our community can make waves very quickly for a lot of things. So hopefully, 260-something, that's a huge amount of accounts. So we're so excited to see that and to find out who they are and bring them into the fold and get them all involved.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, it's something that we've thought a lot about with other organizations that have similar missions to HRN, and we're trying to figure out how we can work together to, you know, be bigger than the sum of our parts. Something that you did at the first launch party or the first launch event for RWCF is you were from the get-go already trying to foster those relationships and make sure that you were reducing redundancies and working together and making sure that you were connected to the right other organizations. Mm-hmm. Why was that important? And, how has that work continued since then?
Well, I think we're here in Gay Pride Month. And I think about the early days of the gay rights organizing, which happened way before Stonewall, the Daughters of Bilitis and the Mattachine Society, they were really, small organizations with very dedicated individuals running them who were doing, working their jobs and doing this in their spare time, very much undercover. And I feel like restaurant organizing is a similar place. There's a few organizations doing it, but compared to the thousands of LGBTQ organizations that popped up in the 80s, we're at this kind of pre-Stonewall era for restaurant worker organizing. And it's so important for us to learn from the experience of other movements where there was a lot of infighting in those other movements. And we don't want to do that. We want to recognize the amazing work of other organizations like Rock United, the Restaurant Opportunities Centers United, and so many other organizations, both in the restaurant movement and in labor organizing, in women's rights, in farm worker organizing. We have so much to learn from those organizations, and we've been trying really hard in this first year to not only make grants to some of the organizations, nonprofits that are doing that in the essential work in the restaurant industry, but just, you know, sitting down and like getting together for coffee with some of their leaders and like hearing what they're doing, because they're going to inform also our like our restaurant tips guidelines project that we're working on too.
Well, that's like a really good segue to the op-ed that you wrote, which is lessons. Title is On the 50th Anniversary of Stonewall, 11 Movement Building Lessons for Restaurant Workers. Can you talk through a few of those and, just elaborate a little bit?
Sure. Again, it was really acknowledging that we are part of a larger history of organizing and, you know, the gays, as I am one of them. I love to call them the gays. They have made some mistakes and they've had great successes, and we should learn from both of them. So number one is like reframing to pride and community. And I really think that that is for restaurant workers, just to acknowledge, you know, that we are a community. I think that a lot of times we don't see ourselves that way. And we have unique challenges, but we also have lots to be proud of. We make people happy on a daily basis. We also encounter like really deep wage and career ladder issues and sexual harassment and exploitation of immigrants. There's so many things that we encounter together, and we need to see each other as a community. So that's one thing. Working for the long term and realizing this is going to be a long fight, that we have to look for our wins, but we know that we're going to be at it for a long time. Making the most of crises when they happen. I don't know what our crises will be. And then really crafting messages that resonate with a lot of Americans. I think that was one of the lessons of the gay marriage movement, was just finding the things that people really connect with. And for gay marriage movement, that was really around people understanding and doing a lot of research, marketing research, about what resonated with the heartland. And that was, you know, these are people who have value and that want to deepen their own family connections. And so, like, if we find the messages that will resonate for people who are generally not into labor issues, that, you know, that we are a community that makes people happy, and so that there's some sort of reciprocal relationship there, I think those are the kinds of messages that we need to, like, look into and figure out. So I don't know, I probably shouldn't go down the whole long list. You know, I think that there is something to be said about restaurant workers coming out and really kind of being proud of who they are and talking about the conditions that they work in and talking about the challenges and really saying, you know, I'm in this as a career. I believe in, like, the work that I do, and I want to do it for a long time. I'm not just, like, you know, getting tips while I'm trying to be an actor. This is my career.
Yeah.
There was also like a, I don't know if it would be a meme, but there was a photo that was going around for a little while, about like a cook sitting on a bucket and like scarfing down a meal. Mm. And people were like, this is like how tough we are. And then very quickly the conversation shifted to like, why? Like, why should this be what we're all okay with? And I wonder if you also, any of you see that attitude shifting more in that direction, or if the, like, kind of toughness aspect is still appealing and acceptable to a lot of people.
I think things are changing a bit. I mean, I think more specifically back of house, I think, than front of house, I see bigger changes. You know, there's the glorified chef who's yelling at everyone and is not acceptable anymore at all. You know, that has never been a way to really get productivity, and that used to deal with it. And when I know Kat Kinsman does a ton of work in this area, but the amount of people in kitchens and back of house who have mental health issues, depression and all these other things, and can lead to alcoholism and drug use, and it's hard. I think there's less glorifying that, like, I just worked 70 hours. People, and part of that's due to like all the enforcement of the labor laws, you know, has been helpful in that way of, you know, people are looking at their overtime, and as things change, like, owners look at that now, and it's like the byproduct is now people get functional time off. So I see a lot there. Front of house, I think it still has a weird we're still in a weird place. You know, I think everyone's very split on like the tipping situation and issue. I don't know anyone who actually all agrees on it. And, you know, for the most part, you know, especially bartenders have been given a lot of celebrity and you know, it's kind of like they get to walk behind that bar and it's their rock star moment. And that's still growing in that way. So you see, I think you see a little bit more of teams starting to work together in that way. You know, less floor versus bar, but there's things to happen. So I think we have a lot further way to go in that attitude. But, you know, I think, again, people are just more aware, the next generation of restaurant workers are more aware of their rights in a lot of ways about taking time and like, hey, I need my break or those things like, which never happened, you know, we were working. And at the same time, you're like, there's moments where you're like, I don't need a 15-minute break. I need to just crunch through this time. But I think it's more of like everyone working together as a team mentality.
Well, let's take a really quick break. We'll come back.
Speaking of.
Yeah. You all deserve a break. Yeah, we'll be right back.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. Hi, my name is Sam Benrubi, and I'm the host of The Grape Nation on Heritage Radio Network. With this show, we bring wine to the people. Each week, we bring the best guests in wine on, taste different wines on air, and invite our listeners to taste with us. You'll find our approach to wine decidedly unsnobby. You can find The Grape Nation wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Thank you, Roberta's. We're back. We're back. It's Negroni Week.
We have cake.
It's Pride Month. Tomorrow, Stonewall 50. But today is Michael's birthday. What more could you want? I don't know.
I'm fulfilled.
Yeah.
More cake.
We had more cake. As much cake as you want. We're also drinking Negronis, and
life is good.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask John and Lynette, as our bartender extraordinaires, what's the perfect Negroni?
Ooh. Whoa.
Ooh, controversial.
It is. I think I always learn Negronis around the rocks, and there's a lot of people making them up, and I'm just not down with it. I think because of like the ingredients. Yeah. John, yeah. I agree. Negroni is a rocks cocktail. You can make the most beautiful piece of ice you want, whatever, but I think the viscosity of the ingredients needs ice and then just a little bit more gin.
Yeah. Always. Smart.
Equal parts, and then you're like, gin.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel about the Negroni that I made here?
Delicious.
You can be very honest.
I mean, yeah, that's like sort of.
Because I didn't measure it. So everyone's is slightly different. They're all custom.
I like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Did you base it on our personalities? Like mine is just a glass of gin?
I don't know who got what. So this is the one I like to make. And I apologize, Campari. We love you. But I didn't use Campari. I used Amaro della Etna instead. And then I use a little bit of sweet and a little bit of dry vermouth. And then I decided to use this wild gin that we got a couple months ago from a friend in Portland.
I was going to say it's a little drier than normal. So I never used dry vermouth in mine. So I was like, a little drier. I thought at first it was the gin, but look at that palate be damned.
Yeah, we actually don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I like to mix it up.
A little perfect Negroni.
Yeah, in case for our friends at home, if you are not familiar with Amaro dell'Etna, it is from Mount Etna in Sicily. And the tasting notes are Amaro dell'Etna is a well-balanced with orange peel essence and a bittersweet rhubarb finish. So that's like very seasonal too.
Yeah. I knew that. That's delicious. What I was doing.
Yeah.
Delicious. And shout out to Oscar for getting our orange twists going. Yes, and he went on a shopping trip. He went on a shopping trip and had to call for backup. Which Amaro should I get? Which size vermouth?
Well done, Oscar.
Thank you. You killed it. You. And now we have things to add to our speakeasy bar.
Woo-hoo. Which is looking a little picked over. What happened, guys?
We're thirsty.
Everybody's been thirsty.
Yeah, a cognac binge over there.
And now there's all these bottles with like a half an inch in the bottom. I'm like, if you're going to drink it all, just finish it. Come on, guys. Come on.
Fair enough.
That's my housekeeping note for the
Never leave that.
Studio.
Like that Pierre Ferrand needs to be just finished. It's like.
Oh, it's like a centimeter.
Yeah.
It's, a millimeter.
It's pretty.
Maybe we need to go make some like terrifying punch with all these leftovers and force feed it to everybody who did this to us.
Like, do you remember when you would like get every type of soda at the fountain?
Yeah. It's a Long Island iced tea of the speakeasy bar.
Of the most premium LI tea you would ever have.
Well, I think it's the time of our show when we're going to play some trivia.
Yay, favorite part.
Are you guys ready?
Ready.
Okay, so... Also, I also wanted to say, we first time John DeBerry came on, we played some John DeBerry Jack Candy trivia. But John DeBerry's Twitter feed is not as Jack Candy as it used to be.
Really? Huh. I'm evolving, you know.
It's like, much more like political and like.
Yeah. Well, it's just the debates were last night, so.
Don't spoil it for me. I recorded it. I have to go watch.
Are you gonna do a double header tonight?
I'm just gonna watch through, no commercials. I'll like binge all of the.
4 hours of Democratic debate.
I can do it.
I'm having a hard time not giving spoilers.
Any impressions on last night's?
It's okay. I mean,
besides the technical difficulties.
Oh. I legit thought I was having a stroke when Beto O'Rourke started speaking Spanish because it was so confusing.
I heard all the Spanish speakers this morning.
Oh my God.
So much
Spanish.
You know when you like realize you're in a dream and because like the floor falls from under you? It's like that's exactly how I was feeling. I was like, this is so disorienting.
Also, Beto O'Rourke needs to learn how to shave. He had like all these like little like nick marks on his face. I'm like, put some makeup on, girl.
He's an alumnus.
Beto
of
did
our
not
college.
Have the worst he Spanish went to Columbia. Accent, though.
He did.
There was
best.
One very, very clear worst Spanish, and I thought my eyes were gonna fall out of my head. It was really, really bad. I won't throw any shade, but the one who had probably the whitest teeth also had the worst Spanish.
I think it's De Blasio.
No, it was Cory Booker. It's Cory Booker.
No,
it was just like don't at that point. Like the Spanish itself was fine, but the accent was so horrible.
Oh no,
it just like I couldn't get past it. It kind of ruined it for me for the whole rest of the night.
I bet Uncle Joe's got some super white teeth though too.
Oh yeah, probably.
Here we go.
On NPR this morning, they said that Cory Booker had. They did a whole analysis. He had the most airtime.
He was talking
the most. He had like 10 minutes and 67 seconds or something.
Is he dating Rosario? Is that
true?
Yes. Oh. He gets more points for being with her.
Yeah.
I have to say, I'm like, oh man.
I mean,
she's amazing.
He's doing a fine job.
Yeah.
I have to say there was so much interrupting and crosstalk by like a few choice individuals that like I almost put the remote through the TV because I was just like, could you just not?
Can they just cut their mics? I was wondering.
Why they didn't. They just like let it totally happen.
Well, because they have to strategize. The people who are at the outer edges, Bill de Blasio, the Delaney guy or whatever guy that guy is.
That guy.
Like they basically start at the middle and go out based on like, who has the highest poll ratings.
Yeah.
So they're trying to get a word in edgewise, so you knew the more was going to come from the outs.
Oh, yeah. It was just desperation, though.
It was pure
and then at the end,
I mean, I think tonight's theme will be No Country for Old Men. It's going to be like Biden versus Bernie. I'm like, oh, Lord. Can't wait to see it. I'm like,
thank God for Kamala.
Thank God.
Man, it's what a wild couple days it's gonna be.
Does anybody know what's gonna happen for the next round of debates, though?
Because, a lot of
like,
people.
We're not gonna still have 20.
No, there
are
no.
Of God, right?
There's another hard break, I think. Yeah. Right
for the next one's benchmark? In September. Or August,
so they're gonna set like a stricter cutoff for.
They're gonna have an off ramp. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
People
Lord.
Are gonna definitely.
Yeah. People are gonna run out of money.
Yeah.
At some point.
Yeah.
It's not enough bandwidth.
Here's hoping.
Okay, we got sidetracked, but that was worth it. That was so worth it. It's debate city over here. Okay, today's trivia, since we don't have Jack Handy, John DeBerry, is our trivia theme is named after someone very special in all of our lives, but especially your lives, Felix.
Oh.
Should we explain our cat?
Felix? Yes. Tell the listeners who Felix
is. Introduce our friends at home to Felix, please.
The official Felix on.
Yeah, the_official_Felix on Instagram.
Follow him.
Although I haven't, he hasn't posted in a while. He's our cat, and he has a very special personality.
And if you look close,
he's very memorable.
He has a heart right here. He wears a heart on his sleeve.
What does he look like?
Oh God, just a mutt.
He's like a normal looking cat, but a very pretty version of one.
What color?
You know, he's like the black and white,
kind on the bottom, and like the tortoiseshelly kind of whatever on the top. Yeah.
Where did Felix come from?
A friend of mine. She got him, and then she realized her roommate was allergic.
He got passed around like a hungry bottom.
Happy birthday!
Like multiple houses that he got passed around to.
When we were over there for the RWCF launch event, he was very shy.
Yeah.
Too many people.
Yeah, over 10 people he wigs out.
That's cat status, though. Yeah, fair. Okay, so the trivia theme is Felix. So, question number one is, the name Felix stems from a Latin word meaning what?
Cat.
Happiness.
Happy.
Oh, right. Feliz.
Got it.
Yeah. Thank you.
But then she got it right. So, ding, ding, ding. There we go. Question number two. What beloved children's book character uses a golden potion called Felix Felicis to increase his luck?
Phone a Harry Potter nerd.
It's Harry Potter.
Yeah, ding, ding, ding. Ding, ding.
Question number three. Felix Unger is a neurotic...
Odd couple.
Nailed
it. What was the rest of the question?
Felix Unger is a neurotic neat freak who gets thrown out of the house by his wife, but then moves in with his recently divorced and very messy friend.
I'm old, I know things.
In what 1970s TV show? The Odd Couple. Question number four. Felix the Cat, the other one, is a silent era cartoon character created by Pat O'Sullivan and Otto Mesme. The most recent revival of the character is Baby Felix, which follows in a long line of baby cartoon revivals like Muppet Babies and the Flintstone Kids. What country did Baby Felix originally air in?
I want to say Germany?
No.
Try another access power.
Italy?
Yes. Japan. Yes.
Oh, Japan. That does make sense.
Right.
And then I think it did go on to air in like some Eastern European countries. Not here. We're missing out. Okay. All right, last question, number five. Okay, so we know who Felix the Cat is, but there's another entertainer called Felix the House Cat. Do you know what his occupation is?
You DJ.
DJ.
Correct.
Yeah, I knew that.
Wow. Well done.
I knew it first.
From like the 90s.
He had some Britney Spears remixes. RE1.
Yeah.
Great job.
I'm a winner. Baby.
Tell Felix when you get home that you won trivia. One Felix.
And your prize is the rest of this beautiful cake.
We'll eat all of it.
All right, so that wraps it up, but what is everyone getting up to in the next few days to celebrate Pride?
Well, we're going out to dinner for Michael's birthday tomorrow.
Yay!
We're going to a drag brunch. We're going to like a rave, and then we're going to the parade.
Yes, we're going to a queer rave that starts at like 5 a.m.
Oh. Whoa.
And then like supposedly going directly to the parade.
Wow.
We shall see.
How do you stay up?
We're actually going to go to sleep after the drag brunch.
That's fine. Okay.
And then wake up.
Yeah, fair. Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Where's the drag brunch?
I mean, day drinking and now.
It's a Stonewall Quarter Share. Stonewall Community Foundation is their Stonewall Quarter Share, a little young people's group, which I don't actually qualify because I'm too old. I'm in it. They're doing it at some restaurant in Chelsea.
So much fun.
It's awesome.
Yeah. What a fun
Lady weekend. Bunny will be there. I'm very excited about that. Yeah, they're sold out. Yeah. Sorry, can't get
I was working on cocktails today for Pride because our new restaurant La Mita is over on Carmine, so we're right in like the area, and we just got our liquor license last week. So we have our Poppy Don't Preach this weekend that we're going to be serving proudly at a Proud Mary, our Bloody Mary for the weekend with rainbow heirloom tomatoes garnishing it. So I was doing a lot of practice today over in the West Village, but it's going to be great.
And delicious.
Awesome. And delicious.
Happy Pride to everybody.
Happy Pride. Happy
Pride. I have to say, I'm so excited about how many people are coming into town for Pride.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen, like, how they've redirected traffic in Grand Central already?
Wow.
So you can't get to the 6 train through the normal, like, if you're going on that, like, the main entrance, you can't go to the left. They're making everyone go to the right, and it's insane. So it's, like, giant staircase down, giant staircase up.
Wow. I'm having all these like mini college reunions this weekend because all these people are coming in. And
girl,
also,
you should
if anybody
be like Airbnb
to...
in your apartment.
I did not plan
there
it
are some
very well.
Gays coming
seriously.
Into town who are desperate for somewhere to stay.
I'm giving
why didn't
away
I think
my couch
of this?
For free to some gays.
Of course, our owner Juan has to leave town. So he has a friend stay in his place. And he's like, lots of ground rules.
Oh my God. But does anybody want to help me celebrate a little extension on Sunday at Rockaway Beach? Because that is where I will be.
Oh, that'll be great. What a great weekend for it too. Yeah. It's just be
it's gonna I think
hot.
It's there's like maybe a thunderstorm on Saturday, so we're gonna beach it on Sunday, take the ferry. It's gonna be good.
Love. Do you go to Jacob Reese?
I think I'm just gonna go straight up Rockaway Beach because the ferry just goes right there.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
Jacob
if you
Reese.
Ever get a chance to go to Jacob Reese?
I love Jacob
to,
Reese.
Like, the queer beach. It's like the best, hottest Fraggle Rock.
Actually, there is like a bus, right?
Been
I think
to.
You can
take
the free bus
that you can
from the ferry to Jacob Reese.
Oh, really?
I think you can. It always looks very
you can
sweaty
also bike.
On there, so I haven't done it. Yeah, bike. That's a good idea. City bike.
Also, there's parking. You have a car.
Sure, but the
traffic's gonna be a
beach
nightmare.
Is for drinking.
That's true. Speaking
driving.
Of which, it's I highly recommend if you are going to the beach that you make one of John DeBerry's batch cocktails.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Shout out to that Bloomberg article.
Keep on giving.
Mint lime cooler is the best. Yeah. The best.
I'm also a big fan of Ramona.
Yes.
And Jordan's just launched a couple new flavors and they're so good. And like
lemon.
They're also like they look really incognito. So I feel like no one really flags that you're drinking alcohol. And you're like,
oh. You're like, but it's pink.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about the time I got busted. But not because we had all of our cans in koozies.
Genius.
And the people next to us did not. And, like, the cop was on us before we knew what was happening.
Oh,
and
no.
We were just sort of, like, smiling that, like, you got me smile. And he just looked and he was like, oh, koozies. I love koozies. And he went and busted the people next to us who did not have their cans covered. So,
and your beers were colder.
Yeah.
So
win-win.
You won all the way.
We won the beach.
Quick plug here. I don't know if you guys are aware, but we have some very, very adorable Heritage Radio Network koozies, which I was doing some day drinking on the beach this past weekend.
Very
and
that's a great cover.
Support
too.
HRN and don't get arrested.
They're like Heritage Radio.
Win.
They can't be drinking alcohol.
It's for a charity, guys.
This is part of my philanthropic work. Okay.
One more lesson to learn as a nonprofit. Yes. Okay. Well, thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For
always
us.
A pleasure. You're literally welcome anytime.
All the time.
You know this.
Every
time.
Every day.
All right. I think that's our show. We will not be here next week because it is the 4th of July.
Bye.
Oh,
yeah. See you later.
Happy Pride.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.